picturesque Monterey Bay. And bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guests. And is Joel Skousen here yet?
He is.
Oh, well, then I was just about to start on a long five-minute dissertation. I'm glad I asked. Joel, of course, is from World Affairs Brief. And what are we going to be talking about this afternoon, Joel?
Well, there's lots of interesting stories. I guess the big one we ought to continue to do some coverage on the facade of change in Iraq. My lead story for tomorrow's World Affairs Brief will be Bush delays and Democrats waffle. And that seems to be the point. President Bush announced this week he was postponing any decision on Iraq for another month, called for another $100 billion in funding the war. Of course, the Democrats were busy denying that they had any intention of doing anything effective to shut down this useless intervention, which would have been cutting off funding, their natural avenue to make the administration do something different. But I heard at least a dozen Democrats pandering to the support our troops excuse for not touching the funding issue. And if you're not going to touch funding, nothing's going to change. They're just going to continue to pour troops, money, and blood into this quagmire. So as I predicted, Dr. Stan, you know, the Democratic opposition is turning out to looking more and more like mere rhetoric rather than anything effective. There really won't be any substantial changes, but with each new idea that's brought forth, whether it's president or members of Congress, this adds weeks of delay as pundits and media officials and government officials argue these minor points of differences week after week, and this continual delaying continues the deception that they're really pretending to fix things.
Well, you know, I was reading something today. Somebody said, oh, well, we don't want to surrender, you know, we don't want to surrender over in Iraq. Well, you know, you only surrender when, of course, you're trying to conquer a country. I mean, we're supposedly went in there to give the people freedom. Why don't we pull out and let them get freedom on their own? But all of this is just rhetoric to make the American people feel something's going to happen. And I agree with you totally. This whole Baker Commission was simply to say, well, another year, a couple of years, maybe we can do something. Maybe we better put in more troops so we can pull the troops out. And people scratch their heads and say, why do you want to put in more troops so you can pull the troops out? That doesn't seem to be quite right. But, you know, if it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, if you say it often enough and with enough authority, pretty soon people will begin to believe you.
Well, you know, there's no simple solution to anything this complex. In effect, there is no fix. There's no happy ending to this. None, because you've got ethnic groups that hate each other. That hatred has been exacerbated far in excess of what it ever was under Saddam Hussein. Now they've got people with hundreds of thousands of relatives that have been killed by Shiites and hundreds of thousands of Shiites with relatives who have been killed by Sunnis. I mean, this is a cause for holy war. It's only going to get worse by staying, and it will get worse if we leave. In other words, there's no happy ending. You know, the Sunnis and the Shias have burned all their bridges and are working hard at killing each other. And this growing civil war has been aided and abetted by U.S. officials, I've found out. I indicated to you, I think it was last week, that Kurt Nyman had done a summary of some of the news stories indicating dark side officials within Britain and the United States fomenting terrorism. And here's some of the evidence, which I'd like to repeat for your audience. First of all, you know, Kurt Nyman asked a rhetorical question, could some of the Pentagon's hired mercenaries be remotely detonating car bombs and assassinating Sunnis and Shias to provoke a planned civil war? Well, here's the evidence after the break.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen. And ladies and gentlemen, you know, the oldest trick in the world is to have agent provocateurs stirring this up. You know, the Irish Republican Army was pretty well controlled by British intelligence. Here in the United States, by the militia, Certainly the Aryan
nation. It's a fact. You can legally eliminate credit card debt, which has been fraudulently created by the banks. Since its creation in 1913, the Federal Reserve has not been held responsible for its own debt. So why should you, the hardworking American, be harassed for yours? There's a double standard when it comes to being responsible for debt, and unlike the Federal Reserve, the people of this country can't print more money when needed. Day of Jubilee has created a successful program designed for people that want to stop harassing calls and threatening letters from bill collectors. This is not a debt consolidation company. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their credit card debt. Instead of living each day in fear, it's time to turn your life around. Call Day of Jubilee, open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time at 920-293-8024. That's 920-293-8024. And ask for Robert. Don't wait any longer to get your life back in order.
Do you know where the 78 potentially active volcanoes in the U.S. are located? And do you know the locations of the top 300 prime terrorist targets? You can find these answers and more in the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA. With the more than 50 interactive parameters, you can pinpoint natural and man-made disaster areas, brewing environmental catastrophes, the safest cities, the best places for solar and wind energy, and much, much more. Complete with 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 to order on the web or at BerkeyWater.com.
We understand that decisions related to health can be overwhelming. That is why at ResearchedHerbs.com we take pride in offering you herbs whose safety and effectiveness have been proven time and time again. For example, did you know that Live 52, the top-selling natural herbal supplement for liver diseases since 1930, is backed by over 300 research studies and clinical trials and prescribed by more than 200,000 health professionals worldwide? In fact, the effectiveness of all the herbs featured on ResearchedHerbs.com, including those for cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis, cirrhosis, and hepatitis, among others, is extremely well documented. Our website, ResearchedHerbs.com, was created to empower you with the information and answers you need to make the right health decisions. Researched and proven herbs at great prices. Visit us online at ResearchedHerbs.com or call 1-800-845-3841 for more information. That's 1-800-845-3841.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest today is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And Joel was going to be telling us about, you know, the commentator who just asks, is it possible that some of the contractors we have over there are actually fomenting this? Because we do not want a peaceful solution. After all, how could we possibly... how could we possibly justify staying there if peace should break out tomorrow? So you pick up the idea.
Well, the evidence is mounting that we have a lot of agent provocateurs, and these could be mercenaries. These are sometimes actual military people following orders and perhaps don't know what they're doing to follow their orders or what the purpose of them are. But here's the evidence, and you'll see, or your readers will see, that this is impressive when you see the variety of stories coming out now that indicate that all of these car bombs going off are not the work of Shias and Sunnis. And there are actual agent provocateurs. The BBC reported that two British commando special forces were dressed as Iraqis and arrested by Iraqis after they were found shooting and killing local policemen. And the Iraqis put them in jail, but the British Army destroyed the jail with tanks and freed the two British commandos. Robert Fisk of the UK Independent then reported, he said, unknown Americans are provoking civil war in Iraq. One young Iraqi man told us that he was trained by the Americans as a policeman in Baghdad, and he spent 70% of his time learning to drive and 30% in weapons training. They said to him, come back in a week after you learn to drive. When he went back, they gave him a mobile phone and told him to drive into a crowded area near a mosque and phone them. He waited in the car but couldn't get the right mobile signal. So he got out of the car to where he received a better signal. Then his car blew up. Now, here's another example. There's another man trained by the Americans for the Police. He, too, was given a mobile phone and told to drive to an area where there was a crowd, maybe a protest, and then to call them and tell them what was happening. Again, his new mobile phone was not working, so he went to a landline phone and called the Americans and told them, I'm here in the place you sent me, and I can tell you what's happening. He said, at that moment, there was a big explosion in his car. Iraqi scientist Imad Kaduri told Fisk of two other car bomb setups connected with American agents. And I quote, he said, a few days ago, an American manned checkpoint confiscated the driver's license of a driver and told him to report to American military camp in Baghdad for interrogation in order to retrieve his license. We have forwarded papers and license to an Al-Qadima police station for processing, he was told. The driver did leave in a hurry, but as soon, well, that's what they told him when he got to the Baghdad airport. They told him, we forwarded your papers to a Qadima police station. The police did receive, the driver left in a hurry, he said, but was soon alarmed with the feeling that his car was driving as if it were carrying a heavy load. And he also became suspicious of a low-flying helicopter that kept flying overhead, as if trailing him. He stopped the car and inspected it carefully. He found nearly 100 kilograms of explosives hidden in the back seat, along with two back doors. So, there are some examples of deliberate car bombs, and by the way, the police station in Qadima was blown up by a car bomb. It wasn't this one, but they sent in another one later on. So this indicates that a lot of these car bombs are being driven not by suicide bombers, but by innocent people who have been told to go somewhere with a cell phone by dark side operators or people just following orders at these U.S. military installations.
That is frightening, Joel, because of course I've had this feeling all along that we were instigating much of this violence over there, but how could any human being, you know, be so indifferent to human suffering that you'd actually send somebody, you know, in a car and blow the car up with it, with him in it, you know? This would take somebody who had certainly no soul or compassion, the people who are just totally evil.
Well, it's true, and, I can see that even if there are legitimate military people, you know, they're not the people that do this type of thing. You know, they have a contractor or a mercenary who's giving the orders, who's in that guard shack, and he gives the order to the military sentry and says, give this cell phone to him and tell him to pick up his papers at some police station. So it's not some shadowy figure actually giving the orders. He's transmitting the orders through an innocent third party, a military man. This is what happened, for example, in another example at a checkpoint. An Iraqi farmer took his tomato load in his pickup truck from Hila to Baghdad, and he was accompanied by Ali, his 11-year-old grandson. They were stopped at an American checkpoint and were asked to get out of the car. A minute later, his grandson told him that he saw one of the American soldiers put a gray object package in the back of the tomato containers. They intended, he said, to explode in Baghdad and claim that it was work of terrorists and insurgents. Of course, they found it, you know, and before it had exploded. But now I don't believe for a minute that the American soldier, you know, knew what was in that package. He was given orders, put this in the back of their truck. That's what he did. And so there wasn't, these people who actually do these dirty deeds don't get their hands caught in it directly. They have innocent American military people do their work for them, and then if they ask what for, you know, they tell them it's secret, we can't tell you. A lot is hidden in this country behind the veil of national security.
I think you're absolutely right, and we're finding more and more things that are going on here that suggest that we're moving away from freedom towards fascism right here in America.
Well, you know, you brought up the question, you know, this stuff just doesn't make sense. And Robert Fisk of the UK Independent asked the same question. He says, is it possible that bizarre PSYOP or Psy War operations are underway in Iraq, especially now, and this was clear back in 2005, now that Rumsfeld's Strategic Support Branch, the SSB, has been operating in secret for 2 years in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places? Now, the Strategic Support Branch is a secret team of people who work under Rumsfeld and the Pentagon directly. And there was quite a bit that came out in 2002 when this was formed by William Arkin in the L.A. Times, who told that this, which I'll quote what he said about the Strategic Support Branch. He said, and there's a subgroup of that called the Proactive Preemptive Operations Group, or P2OG, that is actually tasked to carry out secret missions designed to provoke terrorist groups into committing violent acts. The group, with 100 members, a so-called counter-terrorist organization, has a $100 million a year budget and would ostensibly target terrorist leaders. But according to P2OG documents procured by Arkin, they would in fact carry out missions designed to, quote, stimulate reactions among, quote, terrorist groups, which according to the Defense Secretary's logic would subsequently expose them to counter-deception, which would intentionally result in attacks on innocent people, including Americans. In other words, for combating terrorism by causing it. So this is the kind of stuff being done by these secret operations outfits, directly supported by the Pentagon with a $100 million budget a year.
Well, I would not at all be surprised. I'm sure that this thing goes on in every war, but I think this is probably the worst, because I think in years past we've had a strongly moral country. I think we have people in positions of power today who have no moral conscience, and one of those would be Donald Rumsfeld, as we've seen with so many of his actions before he got into the current position as Secretary of Defense.
Well, you know, there was that case of the insurgents apparently attacking a Sunni base and floating the bodies down the Tigris River. And Fiss asked the very interesting question, says, does it make sense for the Sunni-dominated resistance to kill its own base of people and grotesquely float dozens of slaughtered bodies down the Tigris River? He said, no, it makes absolutely no sense whatever. That is, unless the resistance wants to send the following message, we are brutal mass murderers who kill our own for no other reason than sheer mindless terror. Well, that's not what's happening. What's happening is that you have agent provocateurs doing this and making it appear as if it's the Sunnis to arouse the Sunnis, and then you have the killings of Shia to arouse the Shias, and you have U.S. operational groups funded on both sides of the political spectrum. One of the pieces that my researcher picked up yesterday was the fact that Ambassador Khalid Saad was found out in the past 2 months to have been negotiating with the Sunni opposition and agreeing to allow them to have a U.S.-funded and built-up force that would allow them to attack Shiite targets as part of their negotiation for laying down their arms against Americans. I mean, here you have the U.S. ambassador negotiating with the Sunnis, trading American security for attacks on the Shias. And that sounds to me and smacks to me like they're trying to foment terror rather than solve it. Of course, there's the torture connection as well. You know, it's a little wonder that more evidence is surfacing all the time that Rumsfeld, the outgoing secretary, directly ordered torture. This may have been one of the reasons why he was allowed to resign. In a lawsuit against Rumsfeld, the ACLU claims that the secretary personally issued orders and authorized the illegal interrogation techniques and caused torture, and that Rumsfeld was directly and personally involved. Now, the ACLU has discovered a memo, according to news sources, that indicates that Rumsfeld, and this memo really is kind of a companion source to the infamous Bybee memorandum, which broadened the range of permissible detainee questioning techniques. But this new memo is said to outline actual interrogation procedures that were approved by the executive branch and Donald Rumsfeld, and these are directly in contravention to the Geneva Convention.
And it was so interesting. 60 Minutes last Sunday had an interview with a fellow who actually took the pictures and turned them into the military. He was a military policeman. But the whole theme of that 60-minute presentation, it was just a bunch of rogue, terrible soldiers. It was all the enlisted men And that was all, and they even made Rumsfeld look very good. I wonder why.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
The war on terrorism. Will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
When making important financial decisions, you should always know the facts. That's why Midas Resources is willing to pay you to read the facts. Midas Resources, a team of hand-picked financial specialists with decades of financial experience who are ready to provide you with state-of-the-art, up-to-date financial services. Midas Resources offers a host of services and stands behind their products. In fact, if you call and order their free Midas report, Midas Resources will pay you. This detailed report will provide you with financial history on the safest and most profitable areas to invest in. If you read the report, Midas Resources will send you a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar. So what are you waiting for? Get the facts and call Midas Resources toll-free at 888-292-2709. That's 888-292-2709. And remember, if you read the Midas report, you'll receive a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar.
The statistics are heart-wrenching. According to the CWC, of the 43 million people who have served in the major wars, from the Revolutionary War to the Gulf War, 3 million never made it home alive. Most likely, each one of us can say we either knew someone who served or know a brave soul who is currently serving our country. Now there is a unique way to pay tribute to the courageous men and women who spend their lives protecting our freedom and to those who have lost their lives doing so. Davis Products is offering high-quality, solid-cast aluminum memorial markers for your American flag. Each memorial marker is specifically designed to represent one of 15 wars. All markers include a 3/8 inch pointed and threaded aluminum rod, painted and highlighted for an appearance that is unforgettable. What better way to pay homage to our enlisted loved ones? Davis Products memorial markers are only $9 a piece and can be ordered by calling 814-827-4946. That's 814-827-4946. Or visit davis-products.com. That's davis-products.com.
Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest today is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. We're talking about Asian provocateurs actually provoking this tragic situation over there. And of course, we're a possibility that we're financing the Shias so that they'll financing the Sunnis so they can attack the Shias. And then we've got all these private armies over there. We're doing everything wrong, but the thought that we might actually be provoking some of the violence there, to keep this whole situation aflame and so that we could justify staying there. That is so difficult for people to believe, and yet I've known for a long time about several of these incidents you remembered, and we never see this discussed in the general media, only on the internet and alternative radio. It's almost as if somebody's trying to keep the American people from not knowing about this and from suspecting that maybe nothing as it appears to be. We're doing everything we can to provoke and continue this tragedy.
Well, what's interesting is that Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat from Vermont, he's going to be the incoming chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he's indicated that this memo that apparently comes from Rumsfeld acknowledging and promoting terror tactics should have been sent to him months ago. He apparently had asked Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to provide him with all memos pertaining to detainee treatment. And actually, this memo wasn't included, and Senator Leahy is understandably upset about this. Of course, Leahy offered that he was also willing to pursue other means of obtaining the information. He said he'll call Attorney General and ask him to appear before a Senate committee. But when asked how tough he would be, he said, well, I'll invite him to attend. You know, he wasn't going to subpoena him or he wasn't going to force him to attend. But he said, I cannot accept answers like, I can't answer this or we'll get back to you later, because he says they never do get back to us. Now, so far, Congress doesn't have any power to do anything if a member of the administration doesn't get back to them. So don't count on Leahy, in my opinion, to push this thing too far. Much of this opposition, I believe, is merely for show.
All right. Well, I share your concerns about what's going on over there. And, Chris, I can see that this is going to drag on month after month, year after year. And there's no exit policy in sight.
No. In fact, I'm not even expecting much help from the courts, Dr. Stan. The Justice Department lawyers representing Rumsfeld in this court case have not responded directly to the torture charges brought up by the ACLU and the memo. Instead, they've simply asked, and this is very predictable, they've asked Chief U.S. District Court Judge Thomas Hogan to throw the suit out because, quote, Rumsfeld is entitled to immunity from lawsuits challenging his official actions as Secretary of Defense. Now, isn't that just like the Bush administration, to claim immunity from prosecution for all official wrongdoing?
Right.
That's no better than a banana republic in Latin America. In other judiciary efforts, Rumsfeld is being targeted. Former federal prosecutor Elizabeth de la Vega has drafted an indictment of President Bush and Vice President Cheney and other top officials for tricking the nation into going to war for conspiracy to fraud the United States. This is in her new book called United States versus George W. Bush et al. Now, sadly, it's never going to happen. Even if these criminals in government don't have actual legal immunity, which they don't, they do have effective immunity because they're collaborators in high position within the Department of Justice, within the appellate courts, and ultimately within the Supreme Court themselves. That's what I really worry about.
Well, all we can do is just keep talking and hoping the American people will understand the corruption that permeates every aspect of our society, because until the people care, there's no possibility that things are going to change.
You're absolutely right, Dr. Stan, and one of the biggest things that they use two things, and you've pointed out one of those, and that is that they do prosecute from now and again, but they always prosecute lower individuals as if they're rogue agents. When there's a bad police officer or a group, they prosecute them as rogue agents, even though those people have a tacit approval for their illegal activities by the higher-ups in the police department, but they never get prosecuted. And secondarily, whether it's in local law enforcement, the judiciary department, the administration, or the military, the use of national security to cover up these misdeeds is just rampant. Senator Leahy found that Attorney General Gonzalez told him this memo was classified. That's why I didn't send it to you.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, Senator Leahy said this. I find it hard to believe that there'd be anything in there that would be classified. I said, you did? How could you be surprised? Obviously, government wrongdoing is something the government is going to want to classify. It's not appropriate, but they do it all the time.
Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen right here at the Genesis Network.
If you would like a copy of this show, come to GCNLive.com and reserve it today. Or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and makes a great stocking stuffer. Honest, WristEase provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, WristEase.com.
Good morning, honey. Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system. I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water. So I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin. And wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a Travel Berkey today for only $209 or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
Send your loved one a timeless treasure this Christmas. Get the book, The Magic Christmas Reindeer Bell. Set in a simpler time in rural America, when a father and son could harvest their Christmas tree without the fear of being accosted by a UN Eco-Goon squad, when a mother could prepare her family's holiday meal without worries of chemical-laden, genetically modified foods, a time when a man could travel the roads freely without paying tolls to foreign monarchies. The Magic Christmas Reindeer Bell, a holiday adventure, is a wonderful tale in which the adventure and the danger are real. And the joy of Christmas comes from the hearts of a small, humble family, rather than a big box department store. Written by Steve Culver, fellow patriot and GCN listener. Get your copy, The Magic Christmas Reindeer Bell, a holiday adventure. Available at Amazon.com or AuthorHouse.com, or by calling 1-888-280-7715. That's 1-888-280-7715. Peace on earth, goodwill towards men.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Joel, would you like to tell our listeners how they could get your publication and perhaps even subscribe to it?
Yes, the World Affairs Brief is showcased on my website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's written as one word, worldaffairsbrief.com. It's easy to find on the Internet. It's a good place to go for your daily news. Is all of the raw news stories that are published on my website. They are pre-filtered, though, so that you get the best rather than the hundreds of stories that are out there on other websites every day. Then I do an analysis every Friday of those news stories to give you the inside story and what they don't tell. Even the best of the stories never tell the complete story, and I try to piece together from my previous experience in and around government to show you how what the media is basically promoting is our variations of the government position rather than being in true opposition to them. You know, the media doesn't really distort so much by outright falsifications, but mostly by omitting key elements of truth that would cause the public to change their opinion about what's going on. There's a very interesting article on my website on how to analyze the news, which should be interesting to everyone. Also on my website, you'll find links to my various books that I've written about what we do about our chronic and difficult situation here in the country, because certainly some preparation is needed if we're going to survive what's coming. I'm predicting that eventually this continual intervention in the world will result in a nuclear preemptive strike by Russia and China on the United States, probably within 10 years. And so it's something that we do have time to prepare. But certainly we shouldn't continue to merely sit in front of the television and watch the pundits discuss these ongoing crises in the world forever. They'll be continuing right up until war comes to discuss these as if nothing's ever going to happen other than this intervention. But something will happen, something very big and very bad for this country, is where we're headed. And I think our globalist leaders are provoking this, specifically because that kind of war will eventually lead to a total loss of national sovereignty for this country and other Western nations, and put us into a global new world order, which we will not have the kinds of liberties that we have heretofore enjoyed.
Amen to that. I certainly have a fear that you're absolutely right. Well, what's the next story you'd like to go to?
Well, the follow-on from this comes now to Israel and the Iran situation. Prime Minister Olmert of Israel broke in a rather offhanded way the official silence in Israel over whether or not they've got nuclear weapons. He basically was responding in Israel to something, or not in Israel, but in Europe, in a trip to Europe, telling them that Israel doesn't threaten any country. But he said, Iran openly, explicit, and publicly threatens to wipe Israel off the map. Can you see this on the same level as when you are aspiring to have a nuclear weapon like the U.S., France, Israel, and Russia? Now, what he meant by that, of course, is that, you know, we have nuclear weapons, but we don't threaten any country. And so he was comparing that to Iran, which is seeking nuclear weapons. Some people took his remarks to indicate that what he was really saying, they won't get a nuclear weapon unless it comes from the air, meaning raining down on them from either France, Israel, or Russia. So everybody knew immediately that Russia or Israel was admitting finally that they do have nuclear weapons, that they intend to use it in Iran. This is on top of several other statements that I have heard recently from Prime Minister Olmert, saying that we will not allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. There are several analysts, including myself, who believe that this war with Iran will begin by an Israeli attack, not an American attack on Iran. And I think that's what's one of the reasons why the United States is playing as if they're pulling back a little bit. But there are several sources from within the administration that I'm going to quote in this week's brief that will tell you that the U.S. still intends to attack Iran within the next year or so. And I think it will be next year. Now, finally, if people, I failed to mention when we were talking about my website, if they want a sample edition of the World Affairs Brief, because it is by subscription, a modest subscription, but they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com, and I will be happy to send them a sample edition of the World Affairs Brief. So this is going to be a major dilemma, Dr. Stan, for the Democrats, is taking a hardline position, or the appearance of a hardline position, on Iraq. But the administration is going to throw Iran right into the middle of the debacle, and I'm afraid Iraq is just going to melt away as the lesser of the two problems.
But, you know, Joe, the amazing thing is here they're having a conference over in Iran to debate whether the Holocaust ever took place. And, of course, they're going to come up with the conclusion that it didn't. I mean, the repeated references to the destruction of Israel by President Ahmadinejad, I mean, it's as if the Iranian leadership is doing everything they can not to quiet down the situation and avoid war, but to provoke a war with Israel. It just doesn't make sense.
Yes, I'm very concerned about this, too. I mean, no country as sophisticated as Iran can be this stupid to be actually opening provoke something unless they're being driven to it by those that control the government behind the scene. And you know, you have Russia with its fingers in the Iranian pie. They could be very much involved in making sure that a radical is set up as the leader there. U.S. could have influence within a degree of the Iranian leadership as well, without telling us as much. We know that they had these secret relationships with Saddam Hussein for many years, even when they were claiming he was an enemy. So it's very, very difficult to tell what's going on when you have these double and triple agents involved. But certainly, President Ahmadinejad acts as if he is openly trying to provoke a war. The only one with a real motive to do so, because certainly Iran doesn't have the motive to get attacked. It would certainly be detrimental to their country, but Russia has the motive, and the U.S. globalists, international globalists, have a motive to provoke the war. Russia thinks that the United States is simply stupid in its provocations. They don't realize that there is a globalist agenda there that wants this war so that they can beat the Russians and then destroy our sovereignty in the process of giving it up.
But, you know, the problem with this whole thing is, you know, that if we do have a war with Iran, even if it's a limited war, I think it'll drive the price of oil up. That will have a tremendous impact on our already struggling economy. Certainly, if you get oil up to $80 or $100 a barrel, that means people are not going to have the money to pay for buying goods. It's really the consumption here that's fueling our economy. And if consumption cuts back, why, we're going to have a real serious recession here in the United States. So the ripple effect of continuing this foolish and unnecessary war in the Middle East, I think is going to do tremendous financial damage to America, especially because we can't even pay our current debts. We're having to borrow up to $3 billion a day, you know, just to pay our debts. You can't keep spending money that you don't have indefinitely, and now the president's asking for another $100 billion to fund this war. And instead of course, paying for the war, we're simply doing it with borrowed money. And where's the money eventually going to come from?
Well, I don't believe that they actually intend to ever pay back the money. I don't think the debt's ever going to be paid back, because war will wipe it off the map when the United States gets nuked and our electronic and financial system goes down. The government's just going to say, sorry, we can't pay. We've been destroyed. It certainly won't stop the government from trying to resurrect American aid and trade to build up the United Nations to conduct this next war that's coming. But certainly it will not be enough to pay off the debts, and I think they'll simply use it as an excuse to write it off. I mean, that's the great evil about the use of debt by government. They're able to avoid unpopular spending schemes by not taxing people. If Americans were to get a tax of $3,000 a year for every man, woman, and child in their household, they would call for this war to stop immediately. But because the Americans are not required to feel any pain financially from this war, only the few who lose a soldier or two. That's why these wars are continued to be as permitted and tolerable as they are.
Well, I'm very, very concerned that you are right, that we're heading towards a war with Iran, and I don't think the average American has any ideas the implications of what this folly would bring about.
Well, in other smaller stories this week, I found another story where government is covering for big oil. Another whistleblower has been stymied by higher officials. Bobby Maxwell has won many awards for the Interior Department as one of the best auditors in the nation. And his specialty is, of course, is auditing the royalties that oil companies have to pay the United States for these oil leases that they have offshore in California and the Gulf of Mexico. Along the way in the past 2 years, with his staff of 120 people, he has uncovered the fact that hundreds of millions of dollars from companies, oil companies, have shortchanged the government on royalties. Less than 2 years later, the Interior Department eliminated his job in what they called a reorganization, essentially firing him. And that was, of course, they did so after 2 weeks after he filed a lawsuit with a federal judge in Denver, contending that major oil companies had spent years cheating on their royalty payments. So, several of the nation's biggest oil companies, including ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, and ConocoPhillips, made an effort to block Mr. Maxwell's suit, arguing before an appellate judge that this case, quote, would open the floodgates to suits by other federal auditors. Well, the trial is going to go forth. That motion to dismiss was denied. But believe it or not, Anarko, the defending holding company in the suit, says that the government's rules were followed and that it owes no money because the Interior Department never asked it to pay any more. Now, grant you, this is after the whistleblower brought it to the Interior Department's attention that there were millions of dollars in shortfalls, and the Interior Department never went and demanded of the oil companies that they pay up. That's how pernicious this collusion is between government and big oil.
What's that old saying about the finest bureaucrats money can buy?
Well, obviously, you know, it's not actually the oil companies paying off bureaucrats directly. These things are orders that come down from higher authority who tell them not to prosecute. Rodney Stitch found that out when he was trying to blow the whistle on United Airlines safety violations for the FAA. He was getting stonewalled not from the industry, but from the very top of the FAA in Washington, D.C., saying lay off United Airlines. This is very, very typical. Now, as I also warned in the previous brief about the Democratic control of Congress, I said, you know, even though they don't have this on their list, I suspect they're going to try to get mandatory health insurance passed. Just as I predicted, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, who comes from my old district in Oregon, has offered a plan, he said, would mandate affordable private health care insurance for all Americans, except those covered through Medicare and the military. Now, that's just what we need, Dr. Stan, is not only 15% of our income coming out for Social Security and Medicare, but another 5% for mandatory health insurance. And for those of us who don't even use the establishment medical system, this was a great injustice. Everybody acts as if everybody wants these drugs that the government is offering that is costing billions and billions of dollars in the drug benefit portion of Medicare, and there are those of us who have learned to live without those drugs in healthy providential lives that use herbs and nutrition to cure things, and this is just an outrage that we would be required to pay for coverage that we would never use.
Even more than that, whenever the government provides for it, why it becomes increasingly expensive as time goes by. I mean, certainly, Medicare was not supposed to be more than $9 billion a year by 1990. That's what they told, you know, Willard and Johnson. By 1990, Medicare was $90 billion. And, of course, just going up at an astronomical rate. After that time, whenever the government interferes with anything, you know, it gets it all out of kilter. And there's not one problem facing America today that a new series of federal laws won't make worse, and especially in medicine.
Yes, that's right. Ultimately, they're going to mess up the system badly. The people will ask for government control of the medical system, and we'll have what Canada has. So even the traditional medical system, which I don't use personally, you know, would become extremely bad if we had socialized medicine in full. I don't think we're going to get full socialized medicine. I think they'll have a convoluted system of private medicine with total control, and it will be very, very expensive. And there'll be no options around it.
I'll never forget one time talking to a physician, an obstetrician, who practiced in Bulgaria. And I asked him how much he made a month. He said, $50 a month. I said, how do you live on $50 a month? Oh, he says, everything has to be done by bribes. I mean, the patients have to bribe the nurse to see me. I have to accept a bribe. Otherwise, I couldn't survive. And, of course, you know, the government's constantly cutting back on the doctors now. You know, they're getting half as much for the same surgical procedures as I did, you know, when I was practicing 12 years ago. So, you know, everything they do, it promotes the doctors to become, you know, begin to cheat on their billing. There's no way they can survive otherwise, or overbill. The government is destroying what was once a proud and noble profession, and especially, of course, since they're depriving the doctors of the ability to understand the importance of vitamins and minerals and herbs and all of these other things. They will not, of course, go along with doctors doing that, and if a doctor tries to do the things that will help his patients, they'll go after his license and his livelihood.
It's true. There's so many medical doctors that have been prosecuted by their own boards promoting alternative therapies that are not approved, even though they're more effective than approved ones, especially in the cancer treatment region. One of the things that I suspect is happening with this insurance problem, though, is that, you know, insurance, even if it's private insurance, and one of the reasons why it's grown so rapidly is because of the tax benefits given to businesses by offering health coverage to their employees. But health coverage reduces the resistance of people to higher medical prices. In other words, when you're not paying the cost, even in the drug, when you're only paying, you know, $6 as a co-payment on a drug that costs $40 or $50, everyone thinks they're getting such a good deal. But what they're really doing, that government subsidy is allowing the drug manufacturer to get away with charging outrageous prices because there's no resistance to it, because people are only paying $6. And that's what happens with insurance. When people are being insured, they don't feel the full impact, and they should feel the impact, because that would make people avoid medical care when they don't. They'd make people live more providential lives because they would more clearly feel the pain of being overweight, of being diabetic, of eating, you know, the wrong type of food.
Well, we're out of time, Joel. Thank you so very much for being with us. We look forward to having you with us again next month. And let's just hope and pray they don't come up with a socialized medical system, or nobody's health or wallet will be safe. God bless. And thanks so very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our Founding Fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Our terrorist cells are prime terror targets located near you. Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000 plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high resolution, full color maps and full color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard to find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
For years, you've been hearing about Herbal Healer Academy and how it's remained the leader in effective, alternative, and natural medicine and education. But how can they continue to hold that title for years on end? The answer is high quality and huge selection. Just visit herbalhealer.com and shop online or request a free catalog. You're bound to find the alternative you're looking for. Did you know that Herbal Healer carries the latest, safest, and effective weight loss products? You can also count on Herbal Healer for the largest selection of safe and natural supplements just for children. And don't forget your pets. Herbal Healer even has natural mineral supplements for all your animals, including horses, cows, and birds. Take a peek at their online calendar, and you're sure to find everything you need, and maybe something you didn't realize you needed. Visit HerbalHealer.com and don't forget to sign up for the free Herbal Healer newsletter. HerbalHealer.com, working with the power of nature.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, and I certainly hope that you enjoyed Joel Skousen, and let me suggest that New World Affairs Brief. I go there every day after I've done my email. Great sources of information. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do on a regular basis. And that is, of course, reach out across America 5 hours a day on different networks and with shortwave and internet and certainly satellite and just being on radio stations and buying time there. We do have an opportunity to reach an awful lot of people. Now, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family for a suggested gift of $20 a month, or as much as you can afford, why, we'll send you the 4 best tapes of the month or CDs of the month in our monthly newsletter. And that's the basis of how we're able to continue doing what we do on a regular basis. I do want to mention, of course, that we do carry the Berkey products, and if you'd like to get them through us, the Big Berkey or Berkey Light, why, we can help you get those. And, of course, if you're not stockpiling food, you need to start stockpiling food. We're in for some very difficult times, and we're talking about freeze-dried food, things of that sort, and we do have a food catalog. If you've already gotten one and you haven't ordered, shame on you. You can get regular, you know, setups. They have things, you know, for one person or for two people for 6 months or for a year. But make your decision. Prepare yourself now. We do not know what is going to happen, but I think this next year is going to be very, very difficult financially and certainly from many, many points of view. And we do not know when there might be an ultimate breakdown of society. The government has actually passed this new legislation, the Military Commissions Act, and the John Warner, the Defense Authorization Act, which will allow them to declare a dictatorship in America. And they're beginning to refurbish the old Japanese prison camps. Why do you think they're doing that? For sentimental value? Oh, my goodness, we just want to keep those plants, those concentration camps there, so we'll remember how unjust it was. Do you honestly believe that, ladies and gentlemen? And then, of course, they've given Halliburton $385 million to build new detention camps. No, they're planning on a military dictatorship in America. Begin making preparations for the very difficult times, because I think they realize there's going to be civilian unrest, and whether it'll come because the American people find out that 9-1-1 was a fraud, and the war in the Middle East is a fraud, and all those people have died for nothing, or we get plunged into an attack with Iran, and then, of course, they send sleeper cells into this country, or maybe we even have agent provocateurs committing acts of terrorism to justify the implementation of a dictatorship, or maybe there'll be an epidemic because they're working on terrible new diseases at Fort Dietrich, and they've already released diseases upon us. Begin making your plans now. Do not put it off. And if we can help you, we do have a health catalog. We start stockpiling medicines, start stockpiling food. And, of course, remember, though, that there is a spiritual component to what's going on, and make sure you're in a proper relationship with our Lord. Well, we do hope, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you want to get it. If you have not gotten certainly the various DVDs we have on 911, we have, of course, Terror Storm, Alex Jones, we think it's a very, very well done one. We have In Plain Sight, we have 911 Mysteries, we have a 911 Press for the Truth, the story of the Jersey Girls, and of course we have The Day That Changed America Forever by my friend Dave Wagner. You can get all five of them separately, or you get all five of them together for $89.95. You need to watch Building 7 come down over and over again. You realize it was a controlled demolition. And if Building 7 was a controlled demolition, then everything else is a lie. And all those people who died on September 11th died. They were murdered. And they weren't murdered by Osama bin Laden. They were murdered by someone here in this country. And of course, if that's true, then the 600 or more thousand people have died in Iraq. And how many have died in Afghanistan, we don't know. All totally unnecessary. Pray for America. Pray for our leaders, pray for our ministers who should be leading this battle, and please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones here, introducing Prudent Places USA, an interactive CD book that is your premier resource for hard-to-find information. Find out about everything from job migration to evacuation information, such as major bridges in disrepair and FEMA evacuation time studies for coastal cities. Zero in on man-made disaster zones, environmental areas of concern, and natural disaster zones. Find out everything from where to get water in an emergency to geographic income levels, housing prices, complete...
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, today our guest is Betty Lukes, and Betty lives over in Australia. And, of course, she's with the Australian League of Rights. And we're going to be talking about, well, Betty, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Stanley.
All right, fine. And so what would you want to talk about today?
Well, I wanted to discuss or ask the question, what happened to the Western Christian world? Where did we go wrong? Where did we lose our way?
All right, that's a very good question, and I hope you can answer that question for us.
Well, I hope I will at least pose some more questions that people will want to find answers for.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you pick up the story there? And of course, certainly you're having the same problems in Australia and New Zealand that we're having here in the United States and Great Britain, aren't we?
Well, I think so. I think because we're common law countries and constitutional countries, then our problems would be very similar, because our systems were based on those two aspects of common law and constitutional forms of government, so they would be similar.
And, of course, basically, these things all came out of the Christian belief, this idea that men were entitled to be free, and that, of course, we should limit the power of government going back to the time of the Magna Carta. So where did we lose our way?
Well, can I start? I thought I need to start with my own personal experience, because I would be typical of most Australians. And what it is, in the early 1950s, I married a Latvian. My husband was Latvian. And I was interested, he would talk about having fled his own native land of Latvia just before the Soviets were to come back and reoccupy Latvia. They had had the experience of 12 months of communism beforehand, and it was only when the armies of Hitler invaded Latvia that the Soviets receded, but they came back at the end of the war. And he would talk of life under communism, and I really couldn't grasp it, because I lived in what was then still a relatively Christian country, and I had no concept of how this evil regime, this Soviet regime, could look at man and how he could be so brutal to his fellow man. I just couldn't understand it. And so I began to read books on the matter, although I would say to my husband now and again, look, John, that happened over there in Europe. That's never going to happen here. And so of course, as I learn about communism and the system, which obviously affected the people generally, one day the question was formed in my mind, well, if that's communism, you know, what's the Christian answer? Does Christianity have an answer? And it was in my search for that answer, that my whole life and direction was changed. Now, I had heard of the Australian League of Rights. In fact, that's the group that I'm with. In fact, my husband first came in touch with it because of its anti-communist stand.
I'm going to ask you to hold right there for a moment. That is, we bring some of our other stations on board with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Betty Lukes, and we're talking to her from halfway around the world. She's over in Australia, and she comes from the Australian League of Rights, and she was just telling us her husband was Latvian, and of course, when they were married, he would tell her what life was like under communism in Latvia, and she couldn't understand, you know, how men could be so inhumane to other people as the communists had been to the people of Latvia, and of course, of all of the areas that that were occupied, and then, of course, as she began to study communism and realize that it really was almost a form of organized evil. And then she began to study more and more what was going on. She began to question, of course, the foundations, the Christian foundations of our society, which, of course, had been the bulwark of our freedom, and certainly even 40 or 50 years ago were beginning to falter. So please pick up the story there, Betty.
Yes, thank you. Well, of course, as I said, I was anti-communist, but what was I pro? And I look back now and I realize that you could say I needed to be born again. But let me explain the sense in which I mean that. And I mean it that I had to wipe my mind clear of the preconditioning we all receive through education and the television and the media. After all, we were told to know the truth. You will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Well, of course, what is this thing called freedom? And how is it permeated through politics? How do we gain our freedom? Well, with freedom comes responsibility and accountability for one's own actions and decisions. After all, a slave has no control over his own life. And we can't say we're free people and not take responsibility and be accountable even for our own votes or choice of politicians. These are things that I learnt. And we had to understand who are implementing socially disruptive and irresponsible policies in our name. You know, we had to be more accountable. Just to vote a particular person or a party into power was not enough if we were going to regain or retain our freedom. And one of the League's policies is this, to encourage electors always to record a responsible vote in all elections. And as we go on, I hope we'll see that means more than just casting a vote.
Oh, I think it really does. And, of course, the real problem today is that if you look at the leadership of both of our political parties, both of them here in the United States, and I suspect I know in Great Britain, and I suspect elsewhere, are pushing basically the same policy.
Can I hear music in the background?
You do, and go right ahead. And because Betty,
right.
You go ahead, and I certainly.
All
I just
right. Well, this is one of the policies of the League, but the League also seeks to promote service to the Christian revelation of God, and I do get concerned when I talk to many Christian folk who relate back to the Bible without recognizing that there hasn't been a vacuum in the understanding and development of the principles that Christ taught over the last 2,000 years. They don't recognize that in our political and economic and all other systems and institutions, these principles have been incarnated, you could say. So I just wanted to mention that. And the other policy of the League is to defend the free society and its institutions, and also to promote a closer relationship between, of course, because we are part of the Crown Commonwealth of Nations, but we also want to promote a closer relationship between the peoples of the Crown Commonwealth of Nations and the United States of America, who share the same common heritage. Now, at this stage, I'd like to break open this thing we called a nation and start to examine it in detail. To me, it's a little bit like we're fish in water. We just take things for granted without really understanding. And the fish, of course, takes the water for granted. That's his environment. That's all he knows. And I'd like to look at what is this common heritage that we share. And, of course, a nation can be broken down into three distinct features. And these are parts of the whole. But you've got to look back into history to see that it didn't happen overnight. Our shared heritage goes back to the development of British common law and the United Kingdom. And what thrills me is to know that the American Bar Association, American Law Association anyhow, that actually purchased a part of the field of Runnymede, where, of course, Magna Carta was fought for.
And there was a 1207, wasn't it?
1215, of course, is when Magna Carta.
All right.
Yes. But, of course, there would have been preliminary stages before that.
All right.
But coming back to this thing we call the nation, there are three distinct parts, broadly three distinct parts. There's the economic system. And the original meaning of the Greek word meant good housekeeping. And there's the legislative or governmental. And the third part, of course, is the cultural and the spiritual. The economic system is concerned with providing the material wants of the people. That's all. It's not a system to make work. It's not a system for full employment, as our political masters would have us believe, or as socialist ideas have permeated our thinking. From a Christian point of view, work is a means to an end. It's not an end in itself, it is merely a function. The legislative or governmental, this aspect has to do with the rights of individual members of that society or that community or that nation and their relationships one to another. And the third, of course, is the cultural spiritual. Now, I used to get into quite a bit of debate with my friends on this very issue because I would say that communism also falls into this framework. It certainly has its economic aspect, and the state, of course, owns and controls all institutions and the labor and the production of the people. It also has its legislative or governmental, but what many people don't see is that a communist regime and a monopoly regime, you know, communism is simply centralization of power, complete centralization. It also has a religious cultural aspect. But because communism doesn't acknowledge a spiritual realm, man is merely a higher animal, and he doesn't have a soul, people can't see, they can't associate that the word religion comes in here. And let me just explain what I mean by the word religion. Religion comes from two Greek words. It comes from re, meaning to bind back to, as in reward, repay, return, and so on. And legere, and that's the same Greek word, the root Greek word, that we translate into English as ligament. And a ligament binds together two bones for movement or for action. And what we say is that communism does have a religious aspect. It just doesn't believe in a higher being or the spiritual realm. But it certainly does incarnate or seek to incarnate its policy. And as I was doing my little exercise to prepare for this program, I typed the word religare into my computer dictionary. And it told me that while it wasn't listed in the words it carried, the nearest to that word was religion. I do get concerned because many Christians think that their faith, their Christian faith, is merely a personal, subjective thing. That it's a touchy-touchy feeling Christianity. But surely the word religion for the Christian people means to bind back into action, into practice, the body of teaching and knowledge of the Christian faith. Surely that's what it means. At one stage here, we had a prime minister by the name of Robert Hawke. And Robert Hawke was and is a Fabian socialist. And Fabian socialists agree with communism. They just see that they're heading in the same direction, but on different paths. And Robert Hawke declared in the famous Fabian doublespeak that he was going to change this nation to such a degree that it could never be changed back again. Well, of course, he has done some enormous damage to our country as he has sought to socialize it more and more. Now we have a conservative prime minister who actually claims that he is a sort of a Christian, a weak Christian, and yet his policies are no different. So I have to ask, you know, does Christianity have definite policies that we can recognize, and as they have worked through over the last 2,000 years through our British Christian heritage?
Well, of course.
After all, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, the thing is that many people would say, well, Christianity says that we should take care of the poor and we should help those in need. And it really does. But it doesn't say that government should do that. And once you begin to look to government to do that, why, you lose your freedom. Because the government, any government that can provide for people from the cradle to the grave, has to be able to control them. And that is the hallmark of both socialism and communism, is government control over the individual. Any government that can provide whatever you need has to be able to take whatever you have and control whatever you have. And people think that you can have socialism and freedom. You cannot. They are the antithesis of one another. That was the beauty of our form of government here in America, was that we limited the power of government. At one time in both Great Britain and Australia and New Zealand, the power of government was limited. And that, of course, now today is only a remembrance of things past.
Yes, I understand that. And down the track, I'd like to just get back to that when you're talking about the poor, because you're now talking about the distribution of the production of the nation, and that's a little bit past where I want to go at the moment. But if we could just come back to this, because I think it is important that Christians recognize that they understand that this was the Christian principles applied, and how the common law developed and the constitution concept developed. And after all, in the study of history, we can see that there's no human freedom, such as the right to possess and transmit property, to engage in enterprise, and to think, which Christianity has not served to stimulate. And doesn't this freedom constitute the very soul of this Western civilization that we're looking at crumbling down around us? And after all, property rights, like the rule of law, of which they are a major part, are socially based, like a language. They can't exist outside the society which has evolved with them. They aren't absolute, but the more they are subject to political interference, the less they are protected by the rule of law, the law that was to protect the rights of the people. And that's what I see is happening with us, that government is interfering more and more. But it's the clever way they're doing it that it's important to understand. But let's go back to this story. This hatching of freedom wasn't just zapped into being. It didn't come about overnight. It took place over many centuries of trial and error, bloodshed, and of course we can see that there was success. And it's the very opposite of that which is common to all the totalitarian regimes, where there is little or no freedom, and there is no creative power, because we need that freedom. Freedom is a creative power, and it's only the individual initiative who can develop his own creative power.
But of course, under socialism and under communism, there is no creative power. They may tell you you're free, but you're not. They regulate you, they control you, they control your property, and they can punish you, because all power then lies with the state. And if anybody thinks that, of course, you can be free, when all power has been centralized in the hands of people who dislike those who want to be free, they're sadly mistaken. Freedom is lost when good people are not involved. And behind this whole move towards centralization of power, in my estimation, are powerful spiritual forces that hate the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yes, well, I agree with you there, but I still want to be a little bit more practical. And I want to point you to three historical signposts, I think, that will help us in understanding this a bit more. And, of course, first is the Gospels. And the message that Jesus Christ gave was that we're to love one another. And love is the rich soil in which we're to live and grow. And that, is, of course, is amongst our people. And then in 325, the Nicene, and then later the Athanasian Creed. These were important in the signpost of history, because what they declared is that reality is threefold. The ultimate reality is a trinity. And that's something very important when you're thinking about a nation. And of course, this was what I have understood to be the uniqueness of the Greek mind, their search for the penetration of reality. And it is a guide to growth. And then the next one, of course, and this is hundreds of years later, thousands of years later, really, hundreds, Magna Carta, the great charter that we spoke about. Now, Magna Carta points to the practical determination of the people to secure results. And that's what is sadly lacking today. The main actors that day on the field of Runnymede were, of course, Archbishop Stephen Langton, representing the church. And the barons, who, though they were challenging King John for their rights, were eventually seen as representing all of the people. And the king, of course, was the state. And they became known as the three partial sovereignties of the realm. Think about that. Partial sovereignties. We as individual people, with our individual rights, we should be sovereign over our rights. We're not, because the laws are not safeguarding those rights. They're taking them away. We understand that. Now, although these signposts are widely different in content and expression, and there are hundreds of years between them, each one of them is an important sign of a signpost of history for us to study, to see the development of this English common law and the constitutional development. And each is a signpost, is also a crystallization of the same policy which became part of Western Christian heritage. Now let's look at common law. Both the American and Australian people can trace the origins of their institutions, their systems and concepts of law back to England. And there are really only two great bodies of law that have come out of the centuries. And one of them, of course, is the English common law, and the other is the Roman system of law. And during the creative centuries of the common law, the end of the law was a moral, ethical end. And I use the word ethical, ethos, in the sense of the spirit or intent of the law. And ever since the period of the Norman conquest, in AD 1066, the emerging principles of the common law were being shaped by Christian kings and by churchmen who were also canonists. Common law was concerned with the temporal aspect of human relations.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. We bring our stations on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Betty Lukes from Australia, and she's talking about the origins of Western civilization and of Western law and of Western concepts of freedom. So please go ahead, Betty.
The other, of course, the canon law, the church law. Of course, the church was very involved in all of this development of common law. Canon law or church law was the natural bridge over which the legal ideas were connected with ethical and theological discussion. Canon law focused upon the spiritual aspect of the individual. Think about that. Common law was concerned with the temporal aspect of human relationships, and canon law focused upon the spiritual aspect of the individual. Both concerns were there, and they were in accordance with the principles of Christian philosophy and theology. And it stated this: England was to be a free community. It was to be an association of families of free men and women living in the fellowship of a free community. In its highest features, the common law aimed at not just the prevention of injustice or deceit, but the fulfillment of the law of Christ, summed up in the Golden Rule. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and body, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And common law judges, who were at one and the same time theologians, sought the answers to the matters at hand within these two principles of Christian theology and philosophy. And the king's justices, who were to administer justice based on these principles, it was their duty to travel the length and breadth of the land, adjudicating in local and or regional disputes and settle them. And their judgments over a period of time helped form the body of law, which became known as common law, meaning it was common to all the realm. And the thing about the common law, it came out of that age, which gave us the wonderful cathedrals and abbeys and parish churches. And anyone who's been to England and seen these wonderful ancient structures would know what I mean. And then, of course, those ancient centers of learning of Christian philosophy and theology were the universities of Oxford and Cambridge. I'm not saying that they're now, but they were. This is the soil upon which the English-speaking peoples began to develop their concept of nationhood and freedom. All right, let's look at an example of the application of the principle. As an example, what was Caesar's role to be in this new creative community? You will remember that Jesus taught his followers, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. Well, over the centuries it was realized, Caesar's claims were in fact quite limited. Christ's teachings had put an end to the ancient claims of complete and unrestricted power by despotic government, and that was no matter what form the government took. Christians began to acknowledge that whether ruled by a king or a president or an aristocrat, the rule was not to be marked by despotism. In the Christian revelation, there was a concept of human personality and of liberty that was quite unknown in the ancient world. And it came to be realized that the moral and spiritual life of man should be beyond the power and reach of the political officers of the community. And that is why in AD 1215, Archbishop Stephen Langton insisted that the church's authority did not originate from the state, from Caesar, but the author of the church was God. Now, what happened, of course, is that it didn't continue to develop this creative community. And in the 1500s, the despot Henry VIII destroyed the church in England, and although retaining the medieval form, brought the Church of England under the control of the state. And of course, that was under his control. But Magna Carta is the historical record that this important freedom for the Church was clearly understood by the Church in England in the 1200s. And of course, we can see what has happened with the church in England. It has just become an arm of the state. That's how I see it. Now, Americans and Australians share, broadly, the values and ideas that cluster around the word or idea of a constitution. Again, there are signposts we can dig up from the past pointing to the crystallization of the same policy, and that is the Christian policy. Kings were once not as powerful as the modern rulers have become, and neither was the church as weak as what it now is. But for 9,000 years, and this is the interesting thing...
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Betty Lux. He's talking about certainly the evolution of society from where it was, when our society was really based upon the Christian faith, and this is from whence our freedom came, and government was simply to ensure that we would not be interfered with. Men could govern themselves under God's rule. And, of course, that has gradually evolved into these socialist ideas where the government will control every aspect of society. And, of course, that's the way America, Great Britain, and Australia are going. And everything is increasingly controlled by the all-powerful state, our property, our lives, our education. So pick up the story there, please, Betty.
Yes, thank you, Doctor. I was interested in reading about the battle between the church and the state over the centuries. And both of them claimed, or wanted to claim, both temporal power and spiritual authority, as did Henry VIII. But neither party, for over 1,000 years they were battling, neither party came quite near to it. And even though the church had stated, and Christian kings had accepted, through the Nicene and Athanasian creeds, that reality, and now let me just say this clearly because it is important, that reality is threefold. The ultimate reality, of course, is God. But reality is threefold. It's not Unitarian, it's not dualistic, but Trinitarian. And it is best described as a mystery, as three in one, when we're talking about God, the Holy Trinity. Now, neither party, neither the state nor the church, even though they claimed Christians, and what I see is it became a revelation. It was minds that were developing and in understanding of God's creation and God's nature. But neither party could relate these fundamental truths to resolving the controversy of and between the temporal power and the spiritual authority. And in fact, in 800 AD, they were bent on realizing a dualistic constitution. The Pope of the day, assuming spiritual leadership of the world, crowned Charles V of France emperor with temporal headship. But his empire didn't survive his own life, and so it was back to the drawing board again. And in 1295... it was Edward I who summoned what was known as the Model Parliament. But in the 13th century, dualism was out, and Unitarianism was once again in. And of course, this is...
Hold that thought right there, please. All right, our guest is Betty Lux, and of course she's talking about these basic parts of philosophy that ultimately led to the establishment of Western or Christian civilization. Really based upon these Trinitarian ideas that have come out, from the Council of Nicaea and then followed through the years for the very dictates of the Church. But basically freedom, as we knew it, came about because of the people's belief in Christianity and, of course, trying to limit the power of the state over the people, because there are always those within the state who want to control. That's been the way it is from the very beginning, and that's the way it is today. And, of course, until recent years, the power of the state was limited by the by the laws of the nation. But, of course, in both the English law and here in the United States, those laws have been progressively eroded not with the consent of the people, nor of the duly elected representatives, but of people who certainly have worked dishonestly to centralize all power at every level of government and gradually strangle the rights of the individual and take away their property rights and their individual rights and their parental rights, always in the name of the law, but a law that did not exist, a law that they had created, because, of course, there are certain people who hate individual freedom. Pick up the story there, Betty.
Yes, thank you. Well, what I see is that, you know, there's this constant battle, this constant attainment or seeking to attain power, whether it's spiritual or temporal, that was going on between a very powerful church and the states of the time. But Magna Carta is still the historical record, the signpost, that men were groping towards a more realistic resolution of this dualistic conflict. And in time, it was recognized there was a third part to the whole. And, of course, if you remember, I spoke of the three parts to the whole of the nation. And it was Magna Carta that revealed it. And the third part of the whole, of course, is the people. At Runnymede, the conjunction of authority in the form of the church and power in the form of the king made apparent the third member of the political triad, and that was the people. And so in anything that happens within government and even the church, the people must be responsible and accountable themselves. Now, despite the following of many false trails, the Trinitarian idea was not always to be denied, and it is to be seen in the unfolding of the English Constitution. And they realized for the first time that the way to go, the spiritual authority, was to give directional inspiration. And wouldn't I dearly love to hear the leaders of the Western Church giving their poor sheep some directional inspiration about this life, about the nation in which we live, about our Christian heritage, and how we came to be where we are. And, of course, the temporal powers, they can really only exist in a Christian concept by their right content. And the people, although the barons at Runnymede may not have realized fully the part they played, they stood as an embodiment of the people of the whole nation. And this was the outcome and incarnation of the interlocking activities, the church, the state, and the people. And, of course, at Runnymede, the purpose was to bring the king to recognize his limitations in this threefold structure by the implementation of the rights of the other parties. And, of course, in particular, the rights of the people. Now, Christians generally don't understand the importance. You see, you spoke of spiritual powers in high places. There still has to be an application and of whether it's the evil that you're talking about or the good. There still has to be an application of those powers. And I find it very frustrating that Christians generally don't recognize that they do have a very important part to play in the life of their nation. Too many times they limit it to their church going and their what I call their rituals and observances and their personal concept or their personal relationships. It is much bigger than that. Surely. I was challenged by a statement I read in my search for these truths years ago, and it was this: either Christianity is in the very fabric of the universe, in the very warp and woof of the universe, or it's just a set of interesting opinions and should be treated like all other opinions. that was a real challenge to me. And one day I was reading the gospel, and I read where Jesus said, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away." Why will they not pass away, Dr. Stanley?
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
Because they're in the very fabric, in the very warp and woof of the universe. Think about it. Heaven and earth, that's in the days when Jesus spoke those words, people would have understood heaven as being sort of a realm up there where God exists. They hadn't really grasped the immanence of God. They understood the transcendence of God, but not the immanence. It's the Christian revelation that has shown us that. And I realized that that statement that I'd read was a paraphrase of what Jesus said.
But okay. How does this apply to where we are today as a nation and as a Western civilization? Because we're losing Western civilization because there are wicked and evil people in positions of power who do not believe in Christianity, who believe that power is the ultimate goal, the ultimate game, and they control the wealth, and they control the media, and they control the governments, and they scoff at those of us who are of Christian beliefs, because they've neutralized the church, certainly in Great Britain and the United States, and I don't know about Australia, but so many of our ministers are preaching simply, do absolutely nothing, you're not involved at all. Think about, these various things, the various activities of the church, but they do not understand the very foundation of our freedom rests in our Christian belief. And they certainly discourage Christians from even being involved in what's going on in society. The church certainly is the major force in America today. It's been tried and found wanting. Society reflects the church, and we look at our society today, and we look at English society today, and we find, of course, it's moving rapidly into moral decay.
Yes, and I see that because we have gone against these principles, that we're going to see the breakdown of society more and more. Let me take you back to what I was talking about, the church and the state, the conflict between the church and the state as to ultimate power. And if you look back in history, you'll see that before the Reformation, the Catholic Church, and I'm not knocking, please don't think I'm knocking any church, I'm not, I'm just looking at history, but the Catholic Church was interfering far too much in the temporal powers. And what happened is that it broke. It fragmented. It couldn't help but do that because it had overstepped the realm that God had allowed for it. And I see the same is going to happen. These men who think that they're going to gain this ultimate power, they won't, you know. You know why? In my understanding, of course there is going to be chaos and there's going to be worse things happening and we're each going to, in our own individual situation, suffer and be in great drama. I understand that. But do you know why they're not going to succeed? Because if what I am saying is correct, that Christianity is in the very fabric of the universe, then they go against that fabric. It's like a carpenter who's using a plane in the wrong direction. Of course it will cause conflict, but it eventually will break down because if you think about it, it is only in the Trinitarian reality that we will find the answer to our problem.
Well, it may very well be, but from the practical point of view, we're moving rapidly towards, world of 1984 that George Orwell wrote about, and as certainly O'Brien described it, a boot stamping on a human face forever. And there can be no opposition to these people of great power, very well organized, as long as the people do absolutely nothing. The people in positions of power, there are not very many of them, but they're very well organized, they know what they're doing. And, of course, they've infiltrated the churches, they've infiltrated the schools, they control the media. And they will certainly survive for 50 or 100, 1,000 years. as of course the Roman Empire survived for, you know, the Eastern branch of the Roman Empire survived for 1,000 years. I think we need to be concerned about what's going on today. From a practical point of view, how can we alter what the progress we're going, because most people don't even realize there's a problem?
Well, that is the great tragedy of the Western peoples. I recognize that. And like you, I have spent a lifetime now in endeavoring to warn our people that this is so, and that if they don't come to grips with what is happening, and if they don't take their rightful position and safeguard their rights and bring their politicians to account, then this is what is happening will continue and be worse. I understand that. And I understand that we each are doing our best to try and come against us. But first of all, I believe that the individual person has to recognize their responsibility in casting their vote. Now, let me just give you an example of that. We have a political party here in Australia called One Nation. And a particular lady who led that group, Pauline Hanson, who got into a whole lot of trouble with the parties and the law as a result of it, because they were out to get her. When she was appealing to the grassroots, she was appealing to the ordinary Australian who related to the things that she was saying, and she was saying more or less the same things as what we're saying, that there is this push for a world government and the politicians are corrupt. And we have a usurious financial system that controls us from in every area of our life. And she was appealing, and all across this land, people responded to that. But of course, the parties were very clever, and they have the great brains to draw on. But there was this one headline that I remember very well, and it was this. The headline was, "Danger, One Nation Ahead." Now, it didn't mean One Nation, Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party. What it was referring to is that there was a great danger that the people, the grassroots people, were going to gravitate towards what she was presenting, and she was going to be swept into power, and that the ordinary people would have someone who would genuinely represent them in Parliament. That's what that was about. Now, I see you can't have a free people if they don't exercise that freedom. And tragically, we both agree that we're in deep trouble. We agree with that. And we can only do our best to warn the people, but individually, it must be individually, that this one, that one, and that one there, and another one, each takes responsibility for the decisions they make. And they've got to stop voting blindly for parties, because parties offer the people a political package. And they haven't, you know, the people haven't determined on each individual policy or agenda that the parties are offering. The party system has been something that has completely corrupted our political system. And if they do nothing else, if the individual person who is concerned about their country does nothing else, when they next vote, whether it's in what we call local government here, or state government, or federal government, when they next vote, they must choose someone who is not just going to kowtow to a party. Because that person is not going to represent their interests. That person is going to represent the interests of the party or the political system or the financial system that is behind them. That's number one. I can't see any other way than starting with the individual and insisting on the individual be more accountable and responsible for the freedom that they have.
But down throughout all the ages, people have not been responsible, and society after society after society, people always tend to vote for the person who promises the most. This is how it was in ancient Greece, this is how it was in ancient Rome, and that is how it is in America today. People don't believe in idealism, they want more. And the government will provide them what they want. They'll vote for those people without realizing that in the process of voting for the government to provide for them, why, they're relinquishing their freedom. Because people do not understand from whence freedom comes. Liberty and limited government are synonymous. Tyranny and total government are synonymous. How do you get people to give up their vested interests and stand for what's right and what's just and correct, rather than wanting more and more and more?
Well, I guess what you're really saying is that what we need is a spiritual revival.
Absolutely. That's the only
because
way
if
you're
I look, sorry, if I look back at Jesus Christ and his 12 disciples, they changed the world, but they suffered. They became martyrs. And they did say, Caesar is not God. And they died for that. Now, until we can find people who will take that responsibility and say enough is enough, but they've got to start, I would say they've got to start with their local government. The local government, at least, they can make more accountable than what we call our state government our federal government.
We're just
the local government.
We're just about out of time. Do you have a website you'd like to get out here?
Yes, they will find much of the things that I've been talking about on our website. It's www.alor.org.
Would you give that one more time, please?
www.alor.org.
And that's the Australian...
Australian League of Rights.
Australian League of Rights. Well, God bless you, and thanks very much for being with us, Betty. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly what Betty is talking about is the fact that people have to be involved, but most people don't even know there's a problem, and this is what we really face today. I'm often reminded of the words of Whittaker Chambers, certainly one of the great writers of yesteryear, and Whittaker Chambers, of course, had been a member of the Communist Party, totally dedicated to this idea of the state actually taking care of all the injustices of society, and he saw the injustices of society, and he saw the corruption within society, and he embraced communism as an alternative to what he felt was a corrupt society, until he began to realize, of course, what he'd embraced was even far more evil than what he opposed. And so he made this statement, and I'll never forget it. He said, I am leaving the winning side, meaning communism, because he knew that they ultimately would come to control the world. He said, I'm leaving the winning side to join the losing side, because I would far rather die as a free man than live under communism. I'm leaving the winning side to join the losing side, because I would far rather die as a free man than live under communism. He recognized that with this idea of centralization of all power with the state came the end of freedom as he knew it. And Whittaker Chambers, of course, spent the rest of his life trying to expose the evils of communism. What people do not understand is that we are headed towards a communist-like society here, because communism in Russia was always funded by powerful people here in the United States who want that sort of system. And they have used, of course, the threat of communism to centralize all power in government so they can accomplish exactly that goal, not only in Russia, but throughout the world. They're using the financial and military power of the United States to bring the whole power under the control, or the whole world under the control, of a ruling elite. And these things are happening, and they're happening very quickly today. The war in the Middle East today, as tragic and as horrible as it is primarily a diversion so that you're not seeing what's going on here at home, as they pass all sorts of new legislation that lays the foundation for a military dictatorship here in America. Do you know that they can listen to your cell phone even when it's off? That they can actually listen to your conversation. They can do it in your car if you have a global positioning built in by the manufacturer. There's a little microphone in there, and anywhere you are, they can listen to whatever you're doing. Do you think that happened just by accident? These people are very clever, they're very powerful, and they've been planning for a long time what's about to unfold today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I really need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and people have to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. People cannot understand that we are rapidly losing our freedom. People do not understand the implications of the Military Commission Act and the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act. The Military Commissions Act allows for the setting up of military commissions, doing away with the right of habeas corpus. It allows and legitimizes torture. You can use torture, evidence obtained by torture in these military commissions. You can, of course, bring in hearsay evidence. You can actually torture people and get them to confess, or torture other people and use that evidence against the accused. It is the most draconian law ever imagined. They tell you it only is for aliens, but after all, when you're in prison, and they actually stipulated in this that you cannot go to the courts outside, you can only go to the military commission, you're talking about a military dictatorship, and the military does what it's told you. You can't even have your own lawyer. How are you ever going to prove you're an American citizen? Well, with the Military Commission Act, such as it is, and of course they can torture you, and torture you, and torture you, or anybody else. And where is the outcry from our Christian leaders? And then, of course, the John Warner Act, of course, simply allows them to declare a military dictatorship in the United States. In fact, Senator Patrick Leahy says it encourages the president to establish a military dictatorship. People say that could never happen in America. If you have a cell phone, do you know there's a little switch in there that can be mobilized from a satellite, so they can listen to your conversation even when of course, you have your cell phone turned off? Same thing is true with the global positioning, and many of the cars, General Motors cars, have a system built in for global positioning. It allows them to listen to your conversation in your car. They can track you in your car. They can track you with your cell phone. They're setting up a system now where they will know everything about everybody. They're setting up dossiers on every American citizen. You can go up on the internet, look under DARPA or Total Information Awareness. Not only is the Army doing this, why the Office of Homeland Security, there are people who want a dictatorship in America, and people say that could not happen. Let me suggest, ladies and gentlemen, that you get our material on concentration camps, our 4-tape set on concentration camps, our concentration camp special. Hear Congressman Gonzalez. As he says, there really is a plan, in case of a national emergency, to suspend the Constitution and round up American citizens and put them into concentration camps. Did you ever wonder why Congress just last week voted $38 million to refurbish all those old Japanese prison camps? They say, well, we want to keep them around for sentimental value. We're going to refurbish those Japanese concentration camps. Is it possible they have something else in mind? Why did they give Halliburton $385 million to build detention camps? And if you doubt what I say, you go up on the internet and you Google in Halliburton, $385 million, detention camps. You'll find what we're saying is true. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You need to get, of course, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand the spiritual forces at work. You need to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. You need to get, of course, the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, about the secret societies that have been here for almost 400 years, moving towards a time such as this. You need, of course, to get the book, The Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, and the tapes. We have the Malachi Martin special. You need to become informed and then help us inform others. while we still have time. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, to pray for our leaders, but understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we just ask you to pray for us. We'll be back again tomorrow at the same time.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
On the Information Radio Network, I'm Laura Lee Shaw. The White House says a Democratic senator's trip to Damascus was inappropriate. Mark Smith has the details.
Florida's Bill Nelson saw Bashar Assad and says the Syrian leader indicated he's willing to clamp down on the porous Syria-Iraq border. But the White House tried to discourage the trip and dislikes upcoming trips planned by other lawmakers. Press Secretary Tony Snow says they're just PR victories for Damascus and send mixed messages.
We want to make sure that they understand that just because they have visitors does not mean that the position of the United States government has changed.
Which is that Syria must stop fomenting terror and acting to destabilize both Iraq and Lebanon.
One of the three stranded climbers lost somewhere on Mount Hood in Oregon may be turning his cell phone.